Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Brian Godawa is an award-winning Hollywood screenwriter known for films like Cruel Logic, To End All Wars, and The Visitation. Clearly, he's an arty, right-brain kind of guy, so I was really amazed to learn that he used to be really suspicious of imagination. In fact, he believed it was actually at odds with his Christian faith. Now, despite Brian's artistic talent, he actually thought creativity and emotions were irrational and that God should be explained only with logic, science, and reason. Now, that all changed, apparently, when he began noticing the sheer volume of imagery, story, and emotion contained in the Bible, and he's written a book about that. It's called Word Pictures, Knowing God Through Story and Imagination. And it basically argues that not only that art is vital for communicating God's love, but our understanding of God is actually incomplete without it. Brian Godawa is with us now. Brian, welcome to Open House.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on. Just got to touch, before we get to the book, got to touch on your whole film career. How did you get into filmmaking, especially with, I guess, the left-brain logical side of you dominating for so many years?
Well, ironically, actually, I've always been a bipolar, I speak metaphorically there. Yeah. I've always been bipolar, right brain, left brain, because I've really, my whole life has been a struggle between the rational and imaginative and the creative side of me, which I just recently discovered, yay, C.S. Lewis also had that issue,
yes.
And I write about that in Word Pictures, in fact. But I've always been an artist, and so I've always loved that side, but what happened was when I became a Christian, I got involved in apologetics, which is a good thing, and of course you pursue philosophy and rational argumentation and archaeology and all this great historical stuff, all good stuff. But what happened was that I continued down my path in my art, but then my faith tended to be driven more by the rational side of my understanding, and so I kind of accidentally split those two sides and sort of lived in different compartments, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm,
so consequently,
mm-hmm.
As an artist, I went on and on, and I was actually trained in the visual arts, but I'd always had a love for movies, so I decided early on, right out of college, that I wanted to pursue writing, screenwriting, on the side while I, you know, went ahead with my normal life and got married, etc. And so after, you know, many years of just pursuing my own education, you know, self-educated and joining contests and trying to get my scripts read, I finally got my first movie made, and that was To End All Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And To End All Wars was the true story, which stars Kiefer Sutherland and Robert Carlyle and some great actors. And it's a true story of the Allied prisoners of war underneath the Japanese in World War II. And if your viewers or your listeners have seen the movie Bridge on the River Kwai, this was the true story that movie didn't tell you about.
Hmm.
And it's the sufferings that these men went through under the Japanese, but it also shows how redemption entered the camp and how it changed the men's lives, where they learned how to love their neighbor as themselves, but then ultimately they were challenged with trying to understand what does it mean to love your enemy. So it's a very powerful moral tale of redemption, and that was pretty much my break in, so to speak, into the business of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And since then I've been making films, writing documentaries and feature films, and as well as writing books.
Yeah, Brian, you allude to a C.S. Lewis having the same kind of bipolar struggle like you were talking about before, between the imaginative side of you and the rational side, and boy, if there's somebody who brought it together, it's C.S. Lewis, but that's another conversation. Where did we go wrong historically, do you think? Because you think of the early church, and boy, it actually communicated so much through art and so much through imagination. What went wrong?
Well, I actually come from the Protestant tradition, but I believe that some of the troubles began with the Protestant Reformation. The Protestants were reacting against a highly, what I would call an immanent culture in the Roman Catholicism, which meant that they were reacting against icons, images, and that kind of a thing, because the Roman Catholic culture tended to have a more immanent understanding of God, you know, rather than a transcendent version. And the Protestant Reformation...
We should just clarify the idea that the emphasis was on God being very, very close to you, rather than God being kind of holy and actually different and separate from us.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
The the difference there, the understanding of immanence, is sort of a notion of God within and God within the world and God closer to you, which makes sense that it was a more sensate culture. Now, I'm not going to argue that that's wrong, but obviously they did react. The reformers reacted against the extremes of that, which tended towards idolatry and such. And what they emphasized was a transcendent notion of God as holy other, and et cetera, which, of course, is in the Bible. My argument in the book is both of them are equally true of God,
right.
And so both extremes are ultimately going to mislead you and create a distorted view of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so down that path we went. And of course, you know, if you look at the reformers' writings, though, they did appreciate the arts. It's not like they didn't.
Mm.
But what happened was, because they downplayed it so dramatically, the end result was that they gave lip service to the arts as glorifying God. And of course, we do have some Dutch Reformed painters that are very famous in history, etc. But by and large, the Protestant tradition sort of eliminated the artistic element out of its culture. That's sort of where it began and where it went astray. My claim is far more than just, hey, we got to appreciate art and imagination, folks. That, you know, because that's sort of like second class status, right? You know, yeah, it's acceptable. Hmm. So stop attacking it. No, my claim is that if you don't have an aesthetic, if you don't have an understanding of beauty within your theology, then you are actually do not know God as biblically as you ought to. So it's a pretty serious claim that I'm making, actually.
Mm, very much so. I'd love to hear folks' comments. 1-300-40-2020, if you've got an idea. This is Open House Across the Nation. Brian Gadower, Hollywood screenwriter, is with us. So just written this book called Word Pictures. It's all about this notion of creativity and God and our understanding of all of those things together. So what was the turning point for you being able to change and bring those two together, God and creativity, rather than just relegating God to only the logical side?
Sure. Well, you know what? I think it's been a long process for me, but I would say some of the more influential things were, I love theology, okay, so I read a lot of that stuff, and quite frankly, I read N.T. Wright, and N.T. Wright's attempt to help us to get to see the scriptures through the eyes, sort of a revelation of how modernity has affected my faith,
mm-hmm.
without me realizing it, and so I had been imposing my own cultural interpretation on the Bible rather than seeking to understand it through the eyes of the ancient Jews to whom and through whom it was written. Jesus used storytelling to communicate theology. Why didn't he have courses on eschatology, pneumatology, ologiology, and soteriology? Why did he tell parables? I am continuing to stumble upon more and more of these imaginative elements that shock me and, quite frankly, make me a little scared because there's a lot more ambiguity than I would prefer to have.
Let's explore some of that, actually. Just where the Bible does use imagery and story and emotion. I mean, you could start right back, probably even further back, but just the book of Exodus, where God reveals himself as a burning bush. Now, God quite clearly is not a burning bush, but it's this very symbolic representation, isn't it?
Sure, and I mean, think about it. Look at all the images he uses to show his presence, which we know that God is transcendent, but look at all the images he shows to use to show his presence. Cloud by day, a pillar of fire by night,
mm-hmm.
thunder, lightning, rain, all these images throughout the Old Testament are very sensate. God uses a lot of sensate imagery to connect with us and in our humanity. The parables and the stories. You know, here was a powerful thing for me. When, I would tend to look at parables like they were little, like we do in sermons. Parables are little illustrations of the sermonic truth that I'm going to teach you.
Mm.
But then you realize that, no, the parables aren't just illustrations. They are the actual embodiment of the communication of the truth. And so if you look at a parable as an illustration, you're going to miss it because the purpose of a story, rather than a rational argument, tries to lead you through propositions and abstractions to help you come to the realization of some abstract truth, so to speak. But a story helps you to inhabit that truth because you're following the story of the character and what they're going through, and you're connecting with the emotions. So you're connecting with doctrinal truth in an experiential, in a human way that is different than an abstract rational proposition. You see what I'm saying? And so when you approach the parables, they're going to communicate far more than just one doctrinal truth. As a matter of fact, I liken the rational analysis of a parable can be dangerous. It's like trying to understand a frog by dissecting it. Well, you're going to understand a lot about the frog's elements and body parts, etc., won't you? But you're killing the frog. So you're killing the life of the frog. You know, you're missing the real element of its life, and I'm coming to see that that's how approaching the creativity and the parables and storytelling, that's what can happen if you try to reduce it. What's the doctrine? Now that I got the doctrine, I can throw away the story, right? No, that's not how it works. Yeah. The story is part of the doctrine, and so you've got to inhabit it at that level. I hope that's making some sense.
Yeah. I've been doing a bit of writing on beauty recently and how beauty in the world actually is a reflection of God's own beauty, because you find that God in the Old Testament and in the New Testament actually presents himself as beautiful. It's really quite astounding, whether it be the book of Exodus or Daniel or the book of Revelation. You find God describing himself in terms of light, in terms of, in some cases, like in Revelation and the book of Daniel, you actually find that there is this beautiful rainbow that's actually surrounding him. Psalm 104 talks about him kind of wrapping nature around him in many ways. You know, he's actually a God very, very associated with beauty, and we can kind of miss that if we only just simply point to the logical aspects, you know, this is what he did. At the same time, some people listening to us will actually go, hang on a sec, if you're going to be emphasizing so much about the Bible being written in terms of metaphor and imagery and all of these kind of emotional, imaginative communication forms, where does that leave the historical aspects that they actually talk about? Just comment on that.
Yeah, well, I certainly would not deny that Yahweh's religion that he communicated was distinct from paganism in that he was making a claim that I am not just a belief system, I'm not just a philosophy, I'm not just a myth, but I actually am real and interact with Israel and his people on a, and I say his people meaning the New Testament as well, I interact in history. So I definitely believe that there is a true historical aspect to it. However, again, When you start to seek to discover what does the ancient Near Eastern mindset, who wrote the Bible, how do they see history? There are things that I've had to face about the Bible that the way they do history is not necessarily the way we do it. Now, that doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just you have to understand that. So, for example, something like genealogies, you know, we would expect in our scientific mindset that if you're going to have a genealogy, it's going to be historically, chronologically, you know, exact. Mm-hmm. Well, the Bible doesn't do that. The Bible sometimes uses chronologies like the chronologies of Jesus in Matthew and Luke.
Yeah.
He uses them theologically, which doesn't necessarily match up with what we would call historical. However, does that make it non-historical or false? No, it simply means the way they do history is not necessarily the same we do, so we have to be careful in our imposing our own culture on the text like that. And maybe we should struggle and seek to understand, but have to admit in humility that these ambiguities of the imagination side leave God to be a little bit more mysterious than we want him to be. And that's kind of where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. Open House is what you're listening to right around the nation. Brian Godawa, Hollywood screenwriter and author of this book, Word Pictures, Knowing God Through Story and Imagination, is with us. openhouseonline.com.au for the podcast. Let's just touch on where this leads you to your art then, Brian, when it comes to filmmaking. Because in the book, you talk about some of the tools that screenwriters use. Things like symbolism and analogy and the love interest and getting the audience to identify with the hero, and also a strategy that you call subversion. Now, just talk about subversion when it comes to writing and art and how that brings these two aspects, reason and imagination, God's greatness and his closeness together.
Well, that's subversion is one of the ways in which storytelling, and the Bible is 70% storytelling and imagery and narrative, and about 20% propositional truth, right? So it's mostly story. And so one of the ways in which story does connect and communicate truth and persuade people is through this notion of subversion, which is basically, it's just simply when art or creative imagination uses common metaphors, images, symbols, you, in a sense, it's a three-step process. You enter the challenger's story. Number two, you retell the challenger's story with your own definitions, your own worldview, and then that's how you, number three, capture the challenger's story.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you have things like, in the Bible, there's lots of commonality between the Bible and ancient surrounding pagan cultures.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bible redefines those images for its own use. Let me give one example. Chaos Kampf, which is the notion of the deities struggling with the dragons of the sea, and that's closely linked in ancient pagan cultures to the notion of creation, and that's how cultures describe creation was made, etc. Well, the Bible uses those imagery of Yahweh crushing the head of the serpent mm-hmm. and the dragon of the sea, and a lot throughout Job and Psalms, etc. But if you look closely, you'll see that the similarities are, yes, this is the way they think in that culture, the myth, the symbol of the dragon and fighting against the dragon of the sea is a symbol of the gods creating order out of chaos. Well, in Yahweh's version in the Bible, there's a difference because God doesn't have to struggle with the serpent because he's transcendent,
mm-hmm.
and it describes him more like he's crushing it. He's making the Leviathan, the twisting serpent, do what he says. So there's differences that indicate our God, Yahweh, is the creator God, not your God, who you think is, Babylonian God that
has split the dragon
in half and created the heavens and earth.
That's
right,
and has to wrestle with the dragon. No, this is the God who actually crushes the dragon.
Yes, so the Bible's using images that are known to the culture, but it's redefining those images through their own worldview to give a new term. And that's kind of one of the ways in which the storytelling of the Bible works.
It's kind of the twist, really, isn't it? It's really, you think you know where the story is going, and then suddenly flip.
Yeah, exactly. And
so
you find this all throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament.
Yeah, so it's a great way to learn how to communicate, especially if you're somebody who wants to communicate the Christian message to somebody, speak their language and understand their stories and understand their longings and images and metaphors and all the things that they're living their lives by, and then show how God is actually the fulfillment of those things. Now, what's really interesting about your work is that the films that you've created also include the genres of, say, thriller and horror. I mean, the Visitation and Cruel Logic. And you think of another Christian writer like Scott Derrickson, who made a horror film, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Now, some Christians would say, what's a Christian doing writing horror films and thrillers and things like that? Where does this all fit in when it comes to subversion, etc., for you and your writing?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've got to make my plug here. If you go to HollywoodWorldviews.com, you can find articles that I've written, one of which is called An Apologetic of Horror. And I make the argument that God uses a lot of horror imagery in the Bible. I hate to tell you, folks, but God likes horror. If you look at the whole book of Revelation and the book of Daniel and all the dreams of Daniel, all these mutated monsters chasing people like Godzilla and, all kinds of terror and horror going on. God uses horror to communicate his truth. That doesn't mean, therefore all horror is acceptable. I'm just speaking of the genre.
Yes.
So, yeah, I work in the genres that my world connects with, and I use them to make that twist, to subvert. Now, I'm not doing anything different than any screenwriter does. You go to any movie right now, and you watch it, and there's plenty of subversion going on. Look at Avatar. Avatar, the biggest movie ever made, biggest money-making movie of all time, all over the world, and it's very subversive. Now, you may agree with what it's doing or you disagree, but the point is it's very much subversive of the Western culture. It's pulling the people in, but the hero's a Western Marine, and as he goes on the journey, he discovers that the Western world that he comes from is greedy capitalists and militarists immigrants and exploiters of the third world indigenous peoples, right? Mm-hmm. As that hero goes through that journey in Avatar, again, like I said, whether you agree with it or not, that's the message. And he, by the end of the movie, he turns against his own culture. Well, that's subversion. There, he's showing you this Western culture, which we're a part of, is actually exploitative, et cetera, and that the worship of nature, the culture that worships nature, is a superior culture. Hmm. So Avatar is subverting, too. That's what storytellers do. So, yeah, I subvert just like they all do, and that's just giving you, it's really, I'm sort of giving you a little insight into the tricks of the trade that you may not be aware of.
That's right. I mean, again, it just shows that filmmakers, screenwriters are not necessarily just telling a story. Some will say, oh, look, you know, we're just telling a story. We're not wanting to proselytize, evangelize, trying to get a message across.
They really do. Even the most raucous comedy, you know, a gross-out comedy like the Farrelly Brothers, you know, There's Something About Mary or Shallow Hal or, you know, what was the latest one, The Hangover, you know. Mm-hmm. Even comedies are very much communicating a worldview and an understanding about life and the way it ought to be lived. And you, don't fool yourself. In fact, comedies in some ways are the strongest moral tales because the ability to laugh is what allows them to really make their strong moral point. And, you know, when you laugh, you're a lot more open to what someone has to say to you.
Mm-hmm. So you're working on this at the moment with a new film about the whole Scopes monkey trial that happened back in the early 1900s in your country.
We've shot it, and they're in the course of editing it, and hopefully maybe come out sometime, maybe at the end of this year or so, and it's called Alleged. Mm-hmm. And it's basically deals with it's kind of like the Titanic. We're kind of following James Cameron there. We're telling a fictional love story of a young couple, and the young kid is a journalist, and his girlfriend actually is a pretty good writer too. And they live in Dayton, Ohio, where the whole Scopes monkey trial occurred in America. It was around 1925. It was a key moment in American history, and you know, it has to do with teaching evolution in the schools or not. Mm-hmm. And rather than, you know, this, most people know about this event from a famous movie called Inherit the Wind, and that was an entirely hate-filled propaganda against Christians. And not that Christians did everything right, because they didn't do everything right either, but the point is that we're telling the story now through the eyes of a young journalist. And rather than trying to tell this story about a court case, we have that going on, but we're telling this love story and about a journalist who becomes an assistant to H.L. Mencken, who actually did come down to the trial. H.L. Mencken was a very famous journalist who was very, very sharp and sarcastic in his writing. In fact, the point of the film is this kid learns how to become a journalist through H.L. Mencken, and we see how H.L. Mencken spun everything that happened in the trial, mm-hmm, in order to communicate his personal agenda. Mm. And so it's really not about the trial, it's about how the story of the trial was spun and how we do that by telling our stories, we twist things. And so that's kind of the theme of the movie. But again, like I said, you know, the goal was to tell an entertaining love story of these kids, which I think is a really good little tale.
Well, it's been fascinating to talk to you, Brian. Thanks for your time.
Well, you bet.
Yeah, and we look forward to seeing Alleged when it comes out as well. It's Brian Gadower. He's a Hollywood screenwriter, known for, soon known for Alleged, but other than that, Cruel Logic to End All Wars, The Visitation, other movies like that. Author of this book called Word Pictures, Knowing God Through Story and Imagination.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.